We're holding on Kuf Zion Amud Beis, the second line from the bottom. The Gemara is now going to bring a bunch of dinim, which many of them are not directly related to our sugya or even to our masechta, but they're all in dinim mominus, and one of them is going to involve the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that we learned yesterday, that a person is believed to say zebni b'chur, that that the son of mine is the b'chur, even if that was a younger son. Where therefore, what does that mean as far as the previous children? Does it mean they were mamzerim or whatever? We still believe him, says Rabbi Yehuda, and we said Rabbi Yehuda had also said that our father is believed to say that his son is a ben grush or a ben chalutza, which, as we learned in Tosfos, whether the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda in that regard is a machlokas among the goyim and the rishayim. Anyway, so the Gemara says Shalach leirav Abel Rav Yosef Bachoma. Rav Abba sent a message to Rav Yosef Bar Choma with the following din. Rav Yosef Bar Choma is the father of Rava. So the first din he sends him, Ha'oimel Chaveri Avdi Gonavta. If Reuven says to Shimon, you stole my Eved, V'hu Oimer, and Shimon says, Loi Gonavti, I didn't steal it. So Reuven asks, Mati Riyatlacha, so what is my Eved doing by you? Eved Knani, as usual in the Gemara, when we don't specify the type of Eved, it means an Eved Knani. So what is he doing by you? So Shimon says, Atam Chautali, Atam Esatali Matana, you sold him to me, or you gave him to me as a gift. So far he would be believed with such a taina, except that there's going to be a twist over here involving a shvur. Now, the Rashbam points out, usually, there's no chazaka on avodim, because after all, an eved can move around on his own, and therefore it's not hard for him to leave Reuven's house on his own and walk over to Shimon's, and so the fact that he's in Shimon's house doesn't necessarily demonstrate that he belongs to Shimon. So the Rashbam points out, we have to be talking about a few possibilities over here. First of all, the fact is, when we say Eilan Chazaka, means the fact that he's in Shimon's house right now, doesn't mean he belongs to Shimon, but still, Shimon could have a 3 years Chazaka on it, on the Eved, like you have 3 years Chazaka on other kinds of things. The Gemara had pointed this out earlier in the Masechta. Another possibility is where the Eved in question is not one who can walk. He's a baby. He's a little baby who's not old enough to walk yet. And then the din is there is chazaka right away, because how would that baby be in Shimon's house, the pashtos, unless he actually belonged to Shimon? Or a third possibility that Rashbam says you could have where no edim had ever seen him in Reuven's house at any time. Where there were no Edom that actually saw him in Shimon's house. So therefore, Shimon basically has a migri that he could say, what are you talking about? Your Eved's not in my house. So therefore, instead he has a migri to say that I bought him or you gave him to me as a gift. Anyway. So far with any of these, in any of these scenarios, then Shimon would have been believed, and that's that. The twist is that Shimon then continues, Ritzon Chayishova, do you want to swear the Torah and then you'll take back this Eved that you claim is yours? Now, usually there would be no Shvua for Avodim at all. There's usually no Shvua on any claims involving Karka or involving Avodim. We're going to learn about that in Masechta Shvuos later this year, Beis Hashem.
How about a receipt?
Not necessarily when you sell an Eved, there's not necessarily a receipt. There might be, and obviously if there is, and he pulls out the document, and that's that. But there isn't necessarily going to be one. So anyway, saying he may have gifted it to me, whatever. The point is that no. So ordinarily there wouldn't be a shvur. And besides that, also, the Rashbam also adds, even when there is a shvur, Mida Raisa, the whole concept of a shvur is to be potter from paying. You have three cases, Daraisa, where a person swears in order to be potter from paying. Moed Mixas, a Shomer, and when there's one aid against him. The whole concept of swearing and collecting is only Drabanan. Again, we're going to learn more about that in Masechta Shavuos, Beis Hashem. So like this, something like this. In other words, Shimon could have stopped where he was. He could have just said after he says to Reuben, "You sold me, you gifted me this Eved." And again, we're talking in one of those scenarios where there's reason to believe him because he has 3 years chazaka or because it's a baby, etc. But he continues of his own volition and says, "You know what? If you don't believe me, then fine. You swear, and if you swear that this Eved is yours, then fine. But total, then you can take it. I'll give him to you." The Nishba. Now, if Reuben does go ahead and do that and swears, Eini Yochel Lachzaboy, now Shimon can't change his mind and say, "You know what, Meshata Yisi Bacha, I was only kidding you around because really, look, I'm Potter. Why should I give away a valuable Eved based on your Shavua, based on your voluntary Shavua?" It's one thing. In other words, Shimon might conceivably claim that, look, if we had made a Kinyan, then fine, but we didn't make a Kinyan. I just said you should go swear if you want, and you went ahead and swore. That's not my problem. No, we say once he actually swore at this, then it means that Shimon agreed. Then it means that Shimon implicitly agreed with that he is actually going to follow through and do that. It's the equivalent, therefore, being moida that the Eved belongs to him. The Rashbam also adds, by the way, that this is true not only of Avodim, this is true of other Metaltlin as well. We're saying because the Chiddush is even by other Metaltlin where by other Metaltlin there would be a Shavua would be relevant, but again, on a Daraisa level, if there was going to be a Shavua, it would be Shimon, the Nitzba, who would swear that these Metaltlin in fact belong to me. If he instead says, "You know what, I don't want to swear, you Reuven, swear instead and collect," this is called Hoifchin, this is called that we flip around the Shavua from Shimon to Reuven, and such a thing is sometimes valid, depending, we're going to learn all about this concept of Hafichas Shavua extensively in Shavuos, Rezus Hashem. Anyway, there at least exists a Shavua, and he's flipping it around to the other one. When it comes to Avodim, there's no Shavua even in the first place, and yet we're saying that once Reuven in fact swore, then Shimon can't say, "Meshata Yisibacha, I was only kidding you, I had no intention of actually that just because of a Shavua, I should give you away a valuable asset of mine." So that's a din that Rav Abba sent to Rav Yosef Achama. Tosfos actually discusses and says it may not be so simple to say because he swore he can't change his mind. There were other Gemaras that imply that even if he hadn't sworn yet, nevertheless he's still already on the hook to follow through. So Tosfos ends up explaining, and they bring in that connection of Rashi from Masechta Shavuos, in this connection, that even before he swears, already Shimon is not able to go back on this suggestion of his. So therefore, the result would be that in all Gemara, the Girsa shouldn't be Vinishba, it should be Nishba, Nishba, not Vinishba, Eini Yochol, but rather Nishba, Ve'eini Yochol Laksabai. Meaning that if Shimon had said this, then that gives Reuven the right to swear, and even before he's sworn, Shimon can't say, wait a minute, you're ready to swear? I didn't mean it. No, once he said that I'm willing to accept your Shavua, then already we hold him to that, and therefore Reuven has the right to go and take that Shavua and get his Evan. So one way or the other, that was the din that Rav Abba sent to Rav Yosef Achama. The question is then, the Gemara asks, my Kamash Malon, what exactly is the Chiddush in what Rav Abba is saying? Taneno, don't we say something like that explicitly in a Mishnah in Sanhedrin? You have like this. Normally, of course, there are criteria that a person has to meet in order to be a dayan. You can't just pick anybody off the street and make him a dayan. He has to know, he has to be anshe emes sone botza, and all the other criteria that a dayan should have. But let's say, for example, that two people are arguing on a din Torah, and one of them says, omalai neman alai abba, he says, "I will trust my father to be one of the dayanim," even though normally a father is possible to be a dayan in a case involving his own children, or neman alai avicha, or "I trust your father to be one of the dayanim," or neman alai shloisha roye boker, or "I'll trust even that there can be three cowboys can be our based in. the mayor omer yocholach sabos. So the mayor says after having said that, and the point is, by the way, that Ashbam points out the reason we mentioned royet boker, why not royet soin? Because royet soin usually allow their sheep, often allow their sheep to graze in other people's property. You're b'chlal, and we learned back in Bava Kamma, you're not even supposed to raise sheep and goats in Eretz Yisrael, except under some very limited circumstances. So you can't say shloisha royet soin, because they would b'pash just be out and out reshoim, and they would be posel la'edus, let alone posel la'din. So we're talking royet boker, they're kosher to Jews, they may not be that knowledgeable in halacha, but he's saying, you know what, I'm willing to accept them as a makeshift based thing. Now there was no kinyan or anything involved. So the mayor or miyocholach, the vote, the mayor says he can change his mind and say, you know what, I only said it, I didn't mean it seriously. Whereas the chacham say he cannot change his mind. So we see that when a person, and the halacha is like a chachamim, so even if he accepted something which is not mi'ikra din, then we hold him to it. Well, the same thing would be in our case over here of a shvur involving an eved. So what's your abba's chiddush? We can derive that directly from the Mishnah. The answer is, because Rav Abba wants you to realize that the Mishnah is talking about also a case where he's saying that I will give it to you. Meaning, in other words, so it's not just that he's saying, so he's not just saying, I accept that these people can be our dayonim, for example. He's saying he wants you to know, he wants to clarify that the Mishnah is talking about, even where Reuven is saying that, now you have like this, you have a machloikas amiroyim on that subject in Sanhedrin. Are we talking about, now you could have, the Din Torah could be, for example, is it going to be that actually I will give you based on their psak din? So these three cowherds, these three cowboys are going to go and paskin for us that I owe you X amount of money. I'll hold myself to that and I'll be willing to do that psak din. There is an opinion over there in the Gemara, the opinion of Shmuel, that says that no. When do we say that the Chachamim, when do we say the mayor and the Chachamim would even argue, and the Chachamim would say, Eini yochalach sabay, is only where we're talking about a case of mochalach. So we're talking about a case where he's saying, not that I'm going to give you money such and such, but if the dayanim say, for example, if these three makeshift dayanim say, for example, that my shtar is invalid or whatever, then fine, I'm willing to be mochal you the choiv that otherwise I would have collected from you. So you could look, if you look at it that way, according to how Shmuel looks at it, means, in other words, even Reb Meir wouldn't hold that if he's saying etin l'cha, that we would accept a basin, that he would have to hold himself to what a basin of three cowboys says. It would only be if he's saying, I'm willing to be mochel my claim against you on the basis of what they say. So now Rab Abba wants you to know, not like that. How kamashvalon to be etin l'cha machloikas, that the machloikas is even where the claim in question is whether I will give you or not, not just whether I'm going to be mochel what I claim you owe me, but I'm even willing to pay you what they say that I owe you. And v'halocha k'divrei chachamim, and Rav Abba wants you to know that in that, the halocha is like the chachamim, so in our case, so yeah, it's true, in other words, in our case of a shvua involving an eved, it is basically the same as that Mishnah, but only once we understand that Mishnah is talking about etin l'cha, as opposed to Shmuel's way of understanding that Mishnah in Sanhedrin, where it would refer only to mochel l'cha.
Oh, so then I'll be mochel with what I owe you, but to give you...
But to give you, maybe not. So Shmuel holds, right. Shmuel says, if he says, I'm willing to accept Shloisha Royed Boker or whatever, as the Beis Din, when it's a case of Etin Lecha, then Shmuel says that, no, afterwards he could change his mind, unless there was a Kinyan done, and say, wait a minute, you're expecting me to actually give you away something because three cowboys said so, I shouldn't have to do that. Yes, I said, there was no Kinyan or anything, it's Dvarim Ba'alma. So, but now Rav Abba is saying, no, not like that. The meaning of that Mishnah is, even when it's a case of Etin Lecha, once he says, I'm willing to accept my father or your father or Shloisha Royed Boker or whatever as a Beis Din, then yes, we hold him to that, even if it means that now he's going to have to give something to the other one. Just like in our case over here, where the result of the Shavua, again, the similarity is that the Shavua is not something that he's required to do, that they required to accept Al Pitoda, but nevertheless voluntarily says he will anyway, then the result is he has to give away the Eben. Okay, so that was the first din that Rav Abba sent to Rav Yosef Achama. The next one, Sholach Rav Abba or Rav Yosef Achama, Halacha, here's another din. And the Gemara, at the end of the Sugya, the Gemara is going to explain that the Halacha is like Rav Abba in all of these statements. In all of these statements. No, the Halacha, Rav Abba, who's an Amora, is explaining. No, in the Machlokes of Rav Meir and the Chachamim, that's what Rav Abba is saying, like the Chachamim, and he's clarifying, like the Chachamim, and not even according to Shmuel's limited understanding of the Chachamim, but rather like a broader understanding of them. But as we go through the Sugya over here, each of these half dozen dinim that Rav Abba is going to send to Rav Yosef Achama, the Gemara is going to explain at the end the Halacha is like him in all of them.
So now in the Chacham alone, they're arguing with the Chacham and the
right.
Okay. Halfway or full way.
Okay, so next, Sholachle Rav Abba or Rav Yosef Achama, Halacha Govin Min HaAvadim. The Halacha is that when it comes to collecting a debt from Yisomim, you can collect from their Avadim as well, because an Eved, for many purposes in Halacha, is considered like Karka. And the same way as you can collect from Karka of Yisomim, the same way you can collect from an Eved that they inherited. Rav Nachman says, though, that you cannot. Because Rav Nachman is going to say, now the Gemara is going to point out later, actually, this one is an exception. In all of these dinim, we're going to say the Halacha is like Rav Abba, with the exception of this one, as the Gemara is going to explain later. Rav Nachman holds like this. Yes, Avodim are compared to Karka, but that's as far as, for example, that you can acquire them with Kesef, Shtar, and Chazaka, and that you don't swear on a claim involving them, like we just said in the previous case, and a few other dinim. But not as far as the whole idea why a Bal Chayv can't collect from Metalchlin of Yisomim, and after all, an Eved is physically Metalchel, he's not Karka after all, he doesn't stay in one place. The Rashbam goes on to say, the reason behind the distinction is, after all, a Bal Chayv, when he wants to collect a debt, he's going to depend on Karka, because you can't move them, you can't hide them or whatever, but not Avadim, so therefore they're not under a Shibud in the first place, says Rav Nachman. So therefore, this would be one of those, even though for many purposes in Halacha, Avodim and Karka are equated, but not as far as this din, says Rav Nachman, whereas Rav Abba is saying they're equated for everything.
So according to
Rav Abba, you would be able to collect an Eved from Yisomim, but according to Rav Nachman, no.
And the other one, the Tavoyah, still continues on, so that's not it.
Definitely the comparison that we say, La'olam behem Tavoyah, does definitely apply, but the question is whether it applies to this particular din as well. So Rav Nachman holds that no, and Rav Abba holds that yes. Okay. Next. Sholach le'Rav Abba or Rav Yosef Achama, Halacha Shlishi B'Sheni Kosher. The halacha is that a third level descendant is able to give edus in a case involving a second level descendant, which means, in other words, basically we're talking second cousins once removed. So the Rashbam gives the scenario over here. Let's say, for example, you have Reuven in the Torah, Shevet Reuven has sons Chanoch, Palu, Chetzren, and Karmi. So his oldest is Chanoch, let's say. So now let's say you have a dint and Shimon, meanwhile Shimon's sons are Yemuel, Nemuel, Yomin, Oihad, and so forth. So now what happens, for example, so if you have a dint Torah involving, let's say, Reuven's grandson, Chanoch's son, then Yemuel, Shimon's son, would be kosher to give edus on his behalf. So not second cousins, actually, it's first cousins once removed. So Reuben and Shimon are brothers. Chanoch and Yemuel are first cousins. Chanoch's son to Yemuel are first cousins once removed. So in halacha terminology, we call the son of Chanoch the third level, because he's third. His father Chanoch is second, and Reuben is first because Reuben and Shimon are brothers. Then Yemuel would be the second from, in other words, the second from the close relationship in English, we go basically back to their last common ancestor. It actually comes out basically to the same thing, I guess. Whatever. The point is, in halacha terminology, we call them Shlishi and Sheni, respectively. So Rav Abba is saying that he would be kosher to give such edus. Rava Amma Ach Berishin. Rava says not only that, it would even apply as far as to the first generation, meaning Rava, not the brother. His brother is obviously possible to give Eidos for each other. Yes, but Rava would say that, for example, the son of Chanoich could testify on could testify in a case involving Shimon. So Shimon is his great uncle. But Rava says that would still be kosher. There's enough of a distance between them. A nephew couldn't give Eidos for his uncle, but Chanoich wouldn't be able to give Eidos for Shimon, for or against Shimon. But Chanoich's son is already far enough removed from Shimon. He's his great nephew that Rava says that would be kosher.
So a cousin wouldn't work?
So cousins wouldn't work, right. That's called Sheni Vesheni. We're going to learn about more of these dinim, about what kind of relatives are and aren't kosher. We're going to talk about them in Masechta Sanhedrin, Rest Hashem, of the third parak of Sanhedrin, talks about a number of these dinim that we're dealing with in this sugya. Marbar Avashi even allowed that a grandson could give Eidos in a case involving his own grandfather. So that would be, in other words, that's, for example, Chanoch's son could give Eidos, according to Marbar Avashi, in a case involving his own grandfather Reuven. However, the Gemara says, v'les hilchsa to Marbar Avashi. However, the halacha is not like Marbar Avashi. In fact, the Rashbam says that no, since we say ben yerach ovivhu, al derech like uber yerach imay, we said ben yerach ovivhu, so therefore the Rashbam says it would apply even many generations later, even Chanoch's grandson or great grandson or whatever, no matter how many generations you go down, would be possible to say Eidos on behalf, in a case involving his ancestor. On the other hand, Tosfos disagrees with that and says that no, that they already, if you have that much of a distinction, if you have a great grandson to give Eidos for his grandfather, then the Ri says in Tosfos that shouldn't be a problem. Tosfos also points out that, yeah, when it comes to Sheni Vesheni, then when we're talking about first cousins, then they're possible, but the difference is that, in a way, first cousins are closer together than a grandfather and a grandson, in terms of that you have a grandfather and a grandson. Ma'abar Avashi is saying there's enough of a distance in generations that it shouldn't be a problem. But they were saying the halacha is not like him. So according to the Rashbam, no descendant can ever testify on behalf of his ancestor. Whereas according to the Ri, he could, as long as there's enough of a distance of generations, not two generations distance like Ma'abar Avashi is saying, but three or more, says the Ri, would be fine.
And same thing goes for a cousin.
So cousins, that's what we're saying. Cousins are possible to give Eidos for each other. But we're saying in our Gemara over here, first cousins, that is.
Right.
But first cousins are that which is called Sheni B'Sheni. But for example, a first cousin once removed, as we're saying in our scenario over here involving Chanoch's son, and Chanoch's son and Shimon's son would be kosher. Certainly second cousins, which are called Shlishi to Shlishi, would be kosher, and so forth, would all be kosher to give Eidos.
The only question is when it's direct, when it's
right.
Father and grandfather and son.
Right. So you have also the question is, again, Rav Abba is saying that that first cousins once removed can give Eidos for each other. Rava is adding that even he can give Eidos for one generation back, namely to his great uncle. So again, we're saying that if Reuven has a son, Chanoch, and Chanoch has a son, and then that son can give Eidos in a case involving Shimon, who was his great uncle. The halacha is like that. Next, another din, Sholach le Rab Abel or Rab Yosef Achoma, Hoya Yedeh le Eidos Karka Adshla Nistana. Suppose that a person knew Eidos involving somebody else involving land. So there's an argument between two people about how much of a field a person owns or something, and somebody knows relevant Eidos about that. And then Adshala Nistama, before he became blind, the Nistama, and then he became blind. Now, when he's blind, he can't give Eidos, because then he's not able to say where the boundary of the field is.
Yeah, but he also said that he had a field next to
him. He had a field next to him, but nevertheless, he still needs to be able to see.
10 by 10.
No, but he still needs to be able to see in order to give that Eidos. So Postle, so now he's not able to actually show us, he's not able to see and show us where the boundaries of the field are. So in other words, in effect, what we have is, at this point, the Eidos is going to be only Oymid, is going to be only based on his, only based on his assessment of how much it is, rather than how much he can see, and how much he can see, and therefore such Aedus would be no good.
But if his boundary is a very clear boundary, but his Aedus saying that he was surrounded by Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, that part is...
So there is some discussion, there is a bit of discussion among Rishonim about the exact parameters of saying a blind person is a blind person as possible Aedus. Does it, it may, the Meiri points out that where that in a case where you just need to know the facts, for example, what if it's not an Aedus involving karka, the measurement of karka? What if it's an Aedus involving a loan, for example? You don't have to be able to see now. All you have to know is that Reuven lent Shimon X amount of money at such a time. So based on the Meiri holds that he would actually be kosher for that. On the other hand, the Yad Rama says that an aid always has to be able to see, and once he's blind, he's possible aidus, period, no matter what kind of aidus we're talking about. Anyway, Rav Abba is saying possible, then he would be possible aidus. However, the Gemara continues, a Shmuel Amar kosher. Shmuel, on the other hand, says that such Aedus would be kosher because Efshed, as you said, Efshed Machaven Matsunaha, he's able to say, based on the simonim that he knew when he was able to see, that the field begins at this point and ends at that point. Aval Glima Loi, but Shmuel says, on the other hand, if it was an Aedus involving a piece of clothing, then no, because once he can't say Aedus on it after he became blind, because after all, what is he going to say? The talus was such and such a size. There are lots of talasim that are that size. So therefore, he would have to be able to see it, and he can't see it.
And a hole in a corner, but.
So, on the other hand, Rav Sheshes says we can even accept his aidus when he's blind about a garment, because Efshad Machavin, Midas Rachbay. After all, he could say precisely the exact size of it. You can assume, you know, if he says it down to the inch, for example, there aren't likely to be that. I mean, you're not talking nowadays where everything is mass produced. You're talking about back then where everything was individually made. So each one is likely to be a little bit different than the other. In fact, the Ran explains, the Vort is, in other words, he could feel the garment, he could feel it, and he could say, based on this, that I recognize that this garment is such and so and so by so and so inches or whatever, and therefore that I can testify that it belongs to Pliny.
Especially when a person is blind,
sometimes when a person is blind, they have a heightened sense of touch. Yeah, okay. Anyway, so he says that by glimmer would work. Mind you, Sheshes himself is blind, so maybe he's able to point out for us that yeah, he has that extra sense. Aval naskaloi. But on the other hand, Sheshes says when it comes to a bar of gold or silver, that he couldn't give Aedus on because that doesn't depend on the size of it. It's a piece of good, right? And he says the weight wouldn't be enough. But Rav Papa Amar for the Naska, Rav Papa says even by a bar of gold, Efshed Machaven Midas Mishkaloisev, he could say exactly how much it weighs, and then he could recognize on that basis whether in fact it is the one that belongs to Pliny or not. So you have several different opinions about in what cases would a blind person be kosher to give aedus. However, the Gemara says Nesvi. I have a contradiction on many of these amiroyim. According to Rav Abba is saying that a blanket statement that the blind person is now possible aedus. That's that. Because again, an aid has to be able to see what he's testifying on. But now we have Shmuel and Rav Sheshes and Rav Papa are all saying that there can be cases where a blind person is kosher to say aidus, even though he's now not able to see. By the way, Tosfos points out, in the case of a get, if when he was sighted, when the get was written, and now he's blind by the time he delivers it, he's able to say, b'fanei nichtav, b'fanei nechtam, that's a special thing. The Chachamim allowed him to do that. The whole concept of saying, b'fanei nichtav, b'fanei nechtam, is medirabanan, and the Chachamim are going to be lenient about it. And after all, we say over there, even a woman can deliver the get and say, b'fanei nechtav, b'fanei nechtam, even relatives can, because therefore we don't care so much over there about the parameters of eidus. But in other cases, we care. It has to be, it has to follow the definition of Eidus, and Eidus requires you to be able to see. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Macy, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, suppose that Reuven knows Eidus involving Shimon before he became his son-in-law, the Nasa Chasone, and now, before the case came to Din Torah, then he married Reuven's daughter. So now he's a relative, now he's Pasul Eidus. Or what if he was cited and then what if he was able to speak and now he became deaf. So the Rashbam gives actually two possibilities. Nischarish can mean that in general in halacha most of the time when we talk about a cheresh we usually mean that he's deaf and mute, that he's not able to hear and he's not able to speak. Now, if a person is born deaf, he may well stay mute for his whole life because they won't be able to teach him to speak. There is some discussion in Achronim nowadays where they have schools for the deaf and they're able to teach them to communicate whether the same dinim apply. But in the times of the Gemara, at least, if a person was born deaf or became deaf at a very young age, he may never learn to speak and therefore he's considered like a shoyta. Here, the Rashbam, so here we're talking about he became a cheresh later in life, so the Rashbam would point out it would have to be that he was so severely ill, it was a stroke, let's say, or something, where he lost the ability to hear and to speak, and the result is, even though until now he was able to, nevertheless, now he has the din of a shoyta, so therefore he's posulatus. The other possibility that the Rashbam brings up is it can mean that he still can hear, but he can't speak. So even just the fact that he can't speak would be enough to passel him because an aid has to be able to say his aidus verbally and here he can't. But the Rashbam prefers the first explanation. On the other hand, the truth is that there is some discussion about that. The Rosh holds so the Rashbam says because it's not so much that if he can't speak, then he's actually possible Eidus. But the fact is, an Eid has to be able to speak his Eidus, and he can't because now he can't speak anymore. Now he became mute because of his stroke or whatever. On the other hand, the Rosh makes a point that says that actually he's possible because of a Gzeres HaKosev. The Pasuk says Im Lo Yagid, if he doesn't say his Eidus, which means that he has to say it. So there is an interesting point, in other words, there is an interesting nafka minna between them. So, could such a person, now with Eidus that requires saying and based, and then he's obviously not able to say it. And the Gemara elsewhere says, when you have Eidus that has to be said verbally, an aid can't write it and send it to Basin. But what about, for example, Eidus on a shtar, where to begin with, the whole point is, you're only writing and signing the shtar, would such a person be able to sign on that? It comes out, according to the Rashbam, maybe yes, because according to the Rashbam, the only problem is a technicality, basically. He's not able to speak, therefore he's not able to give Eidus that requires speaking. A shtar doesn't require speaking in the first place, therefore he should be able to sign on that. B'fanei nechtam is another matter, but actually a mute person can't. How can he say b'fanei nechtam when he can't speak? But no, we're talking about, let's say, for example, a shtar that Reuven owes Shimon $100 or whatever. So according to the Rashbam's reasoning, it would come out that a mute person could sign on such a shtar, because to begin with, there's no verbal Eidus necessary, whereas according to the Rosh, maybe not. According to the Rosh, maybe he shouldn't be able to, because after all, you don't have Imlo Yagin. There is actually an explanation from Reuven Grozovsky, who says that actually maybe even the Rosh would agree, maybe there's not such a nafkamin, and maybe even the Rosh would agree that in the case of Eidus that just has to be written in a shtar, it would be valid. Because the idea is when there has to be verbal eidos, then yeah, but when it comes to a shtar, the Gemara often has the expression, eidim achsum al shtar, arein kemishin nechkar eidos on the Beis Din. Once eidim are signed on a shtar, it's as if their eidos was already cross-examined by Beis Din. Well, in that case, then there might not be a problem with him signing on a shtar, because to begin with, no speaking is necessary in order for the shtar to be valid. It's not like he has to go and defend his eidos in Beis Din.
That's when he signed at that point. he was still able to see.
No, we're talking about that he wasn't able. No, we're talking about he wasn't able to speak by that point. If he was able to speak before he signed the shtar, obviously there's no question. The shtar doesn't become possible because he became mute. Okay. Anyway, the braita continues. So again, we have a couple of cases over here. We have where he became possible because he became a relative because he married the guy's daughter, or he's possible because he became keresh, according to the two possibilities that the Rashbam brings, either deaf mute or just mute. The same way piteach v'nistama, if he was able to see and now before he gave the edus he became blind, shofo v'nishtata, or he was normal and now he became a shota. So in all those cases, possible. So now he's possible to give edus. When he saw the thing happen, he was still okay. But now, by the time he comes to give edus, he's possible for one reason or another, whether it's because he's related or because he has one of these defects. Abel hoyele yedele the edus adshle nasa chasonei the nasa chasonei or mesabito. What about if he saw the edus before he became his son-in-law when he was kosher? Then he became the guy's son-in-law, and then before he comes to Beis Din to give the edus, the daughter that he married died, so now they're not related anymore. Similar to pikeach when it's charesh v'chozer when it's pakeach. If he was normal, then became a cheresh, and then became normal again. He recovered from his illness. Piteach when it's stammer, v'chozer when it's pakeach. If he was sighted, then became blind, and then became sighted again.
Stop the
bechem and sasi. Yeah, means like his eyes were open. He's able to see, like v'te pakeach me'enish name.
Okay, yeah.
Or if he was normal, then went crazy and then became normal again. Kosher, then he would be kosher la'edus of what he saw when everything was fine. Zah klal, so the Braisa says the general rule is, kosher tchilosei oisoifer b'paslus, if either the beginning or end is in a state of psul, so if either he saw the thing when he was posel for one reason or another, or when he comes to give the edus, he's posel for one reason or another, then possible, then his edus is possible. He lost it, the sofer of the kashrus, but at the beginning and the end, this when he saw the edus, and when he was present for the original edus, and when he came to testify in Beis Din, then everything was good. Even though in the middle there was a period when he was no good, kosher, then the edus is still kosher. So the point is, in other words, that we see that we don't accept edus from a blind person, whereas Shmuel and Rav Sheshes and Rav Papa are saying there are cases we do accept edus from a blind person.
Certain cases,
at least. Yeah, each one of them says a different case involving land or involving a garment or involving nafka, a bar of metal, but whatever. The point is, each one of them says there can be cases where an aid who's blind is kosher, whereas from this braisa it seems like a blanket statement that anytime the guy is blind, he's possible. Now that Ashbam points out also, we have to see, in other words, that we can't be talking, the Braisa is making a point that the Braisa already had said that if when he comes to give Eidos he's possible, so why do we have the Zahaklal? It must mean that the Braisa wants to tell us that even in cases like this, even in cases where you would have thought to say he's kosher because he could still tell us the size of it, he could feel the garment and tell us the size of it, or he could tell us the landmarks of the character. He could feel the size of the garment. He could feel the weight of the bar of metal or whatever. Nevertheless, by saying zehatmal, the Braisa seems to be adding that even in those cases he would be posulatus. So tiyufta dekulu. Therefore, we have a contradiction against all of them. Shmuel and Rav Sheshes and Rav Papa are all contradicted by this Braisa. We see that as a blanket statement, no blind person is ever kosher la'edrus as long as he's blind when he comes to give the edrus. So the Gemara says, you're right, Tiyufta, that is a contradiction against them. When we say all of them now, we had four Amoroyim involved over here. We had Rab Abba first saying that he's possible by edrus karka. That is possible to say that even though he knew when he was able to see what the size of the character is, nevertheless we say that he's still possible ages. Tosfos points out further, and the Rashbam also implies over here by mentioning Shmuel, Rav Sheshes, and Rav Papa, Rav Abba has not been contradicted. So the halacha is like him, that the guy is possible ages for karka, even though you might have thought that maybe you could say, maybe Rav Abba is implying that when it comes to a halva or things like that, he would be kosher. But no, we're saying we haven't, so in other words, we could have thought to understand Rav Abba that way as well, and then the Braisa would be a contradiction on him as well. We're not understanding him that way. We're understanding that he's saying, that he's saying b'chwal, that he's possible Eidus. Even though he mentioned Eidus Karka, you shouldn't think he means that by Eidus Halva, he would be kosher. No, he means that, in other words, that even though you might have thought that he could say that he could say the landmarks of the Karka, nevertheless, he's possible, and the same way he would be possible when it comes to an Eidus of Halva or anything. As long as he's blind, he's possible for any kind of Eidus. Okay. Next, another one of the series that Rav Abba sent to Rav Yosef Achama, Sholach Rav Abba to Rav Yosef Achama, and this is the one why we brought this whole chain over here, because here we're going to have the din of Rav Yehuda that a father is believed to say something about his children that we didn't know before. So Rav Abba sends to Rav Yosef Achama, Ha'omer al tinek ben abanim, when someone says about one children among the other children, and we don't know yet what he's saying, the Gemara is going to clarify that soon, Neman, then we believe him. But Rav Yochanan Amar Eina Neman, whereas Rav Yochanan says that he's not believing. My karma, what exactly is this person saying about the tinek ben abanim? So the person we're talking about who said is the father. So what is it that the father is saying about one of his children that was saying Neman, we believe him?
He's Bechor, or?
Well, we don't know yet. We have to clarify what Rav Abba meant, what Rav Abba and Rav Yochanan are talking about. Amar Abaya Hochikoma. So Abaya explains, we mean as follows. Yirash called Nechosai. If he says about one child among all the children, I want him to yarshin all my property. Neman, then we would believe him, Kirab Yochanan and Broika, which follows the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan and Broika, which we touched on earlier in our perek, and which we're going to deal with in more detail on Daf Kuf Lamed and following, where we had learned earlier in our perek, we said that you can't disinherit a son, unless you're doing it Mishum Matana. But now, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broika says in a further Mishnah in our Perek on Daf Kuf Lamed that if he says, so we said, the only way to disinherit would be to use a Lashon of Matana. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broika disagrees with that concept and says, if he says about Misha Roy Yoshoi, if he says about somebody who is in line to Yoshin him under normal circumstances, and he says this one in alone should Yoshin, then Dvarav Kayam, and then Rabbi Yochanan ben Broika says what he says is valid. So Rabbi Yochanan Breika agrees that, for example, let's say if he has sons and daughters, and he says, for example, I want my daughter to inherit all my property, then Rabbi Yochanan Breika would agree that that's no good. Because the fact is, the Torah tells us that sons yarshin exclusively when as long as there are sons, then they yarshin exclusively and the daughters don't. So no, if he says Matana, that's different. But Rabbi Yochanan Breika is saying, if he uses the Lashon of Yerusha, and he were to say, my daughter should yarshin me and not my sons, then no. But for example, but Rabbi Yochanan Breika holds, if, for example, he has a bunch of sons and he says one of those sons should yarshin the whole thing, even though he says a Lashon of Yerusha, Rabbi Yochanan Breika holds that's valid. But the fact is, that son would have yarshin some of it, and therefore it's valid to say that he can yarshin all of it. So now, Abaye is explaining that's what Rav Abba's din means over here. If the father were to say about Tinek ben Abonim, about one baby among the other ones, even though let's say he's a baby and the other ones are much older, he's saying he should be my exclusive Yodesh, then we would believe him and we would do that, which means that din is following Rav Yochanan ben Breika. So Rabbi Yochanan Amar Eina Neman, whereas when Rabbi Yochanan says we don't believe him would be Kerabanan, because Rabbi Yochanan the Amora holds like the Chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Yochanan and broke the Tanya. That doesn't matter whether he's really the Yosha or not. The only way to disinherit one son in favor of another would be Moshe Matana.
Oh, even by sons.
Yeah. But Rava says, Abaya, how can you understand Rav Abba's and Rav Yochanan's statements that way? Hai Neman v'ein Neman, then why are you using Lashon that he's believed or not believed? It's not a question of believing him, it's a matter of is it effective or not. Yirash v'la yirash mi boyle, the expression should be, he yaushins him or he doesn't yaushin him, as the case may be. Ella Omer Rava Hochikoma. Rather, Rava says what Rav Abba and Rav Yochanan meant is If he says about one child among all his sons, this one is the Bechor, Neman, then we believe him, which means because Rav Abba is saying Rav Yehuda. Rav Abba is saying that the halacha is like Rav Yehuda, as we learned in the previous sugya, where Rav Yehuda learned from the word Yakir, that the father has the ability to declare this one is the Bechor, meaning even though implicitly that means that he's saying that his previous children are Mamzerim, or they have some other problem of Yichus. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan holds that we don't believe him, because he holds like the Chachamim, that only when that the Chachamim say, as we learned yesterday, when there's no chazaka yet of what the story is with this son or with the other sons, then we can believe him to say this one is the Bechor. But when we have a chazaka that a different son was the Bechor, and he wants to undo that chazaka and say, no, this one is the Bechor, the Chachamim had said against Rabbi Yehuda, that's not when Yakir applies. We don't accept what he says in that case, and Rabbi Yochanan is following the Chachamim in that. Okay. Next, Shalach le'Rav Abba le'Rav Yosef Achama, ha'oimer titel ishti ke'echad min abonim, if a person says, that I want my wife to receive a portion of the Yerusha like one of my sons. Now, ordinarily, that would mean then that she's not getting. Ordinarily, that would mean that she's forfeiting her ksuba. So, first of all, the Rashbam points out that later on in our perek, we're going to talk about that we mean that she accepted that. She's willing to accept that in lieu of her ksuba. So that's first of all. And second of all, also, what is the case we're talking about? Also, the Rashbam says it could mean that it means that both. He's going to be giving her uksuba, and in addition, he wants that she should inherit as if she was one of his sons. As far as the case over here, when is this happening? The Rashbam says either we're talking about a shchiv merah, where nothing needs to be written, just the fact that he says it is enough for it to take effect, or we could be talking about that it's a bari and there was a kinyan involved. He's healthy and they actually did a kinyan, because otherwise it's only dvorim ba'alma. Otherwise, if he's a bari and he just says that, then it would only be dvorim ba'alma and we wouldn't necessarily be held.
But if, let's say, the kinyan would be on karkas, so what would he have to do?
So no, you can make a kinyan to transfer anything. When he's making a kinyan, means in other words, he's saying, I want my wife to get an amount. He's not saying a particular karka. He's saying that when my estate is divided up, I want that my wife should get a portion as if she was one of my sons. So, and he makes a kinyan on that. Anytime you make a verbal agreement, you can make a kinyan sudr on it. But again, we could be talking about that, or we could be talking about a shivmana, where no such thing is necessary. Anyway, so he says that, Nikelas ke'echa ben abonim, so Rav Abba says that, fine, she does in that case receive a portion equal to one of the sons.
No stira?
What?
No stira?
Stira on what?
We said that only sons yarsh, not daughters.
No, but here we're saying, in other words, that he wants his wife to get, he's not disinheriting his sons entirely. He's saying that he wants his wife to get a portion equal to one of the sons.
Can you say anything with a daughter?
That with a daughter, it's where he was saying, I want her to inherit exclusively.
No, can you say
I want to give a portion to my daughter? So it's not necessarily so simple, but the wife is in.
Okay.
Amar Rava over Nechosim Shal Achshav over Bonim Abonim La'acha Mikan. However, Rava clarifies that and says first of all, this din applies only to the Nechosim that he has now. It wouldn't apply to Nechosim that later on he's going to get after he makes the statement, because he can't be Makna Dabar Shalei Bol Olam. And in fact, the Rashbam adds, even according to the Meir, who says Adam Makna Dabar Shalei Bol Olam, but that would be only he only has in mind something that he's not having in mind something that's a Rory that he may get in the future that he's going to be Makna now. So therefore, so Yada Al Tachtona, we can assume he meant to give her only the Nechasim that he has right now. So that's first of all. Oba Bonim Abayim La'acha Mikan. And second of all, we don't calculate her portion according to the number of children he has right now. We go according to the number of children that he'll have later on when the division actually happens. Meaning, in other words, let's say when he said this, he had two sons, and at that point, then let's say to keep things simple, neither of them is a bechor. So let's say, for example, like this, each of them would have gotten half. So if he's saying she should get ke'echa min abonim, means, in other words, in effect, we would consider as though there were three sons and she's going to get one third. But now, let's say before, during the years after that, he has more children, and by the time he passes away, he has five sons, let's say, then she's only going to be getting 1/6 rather than the 1/3 that she would have originally.
Divided between five.
Because we're going to divide it among six people rather than among three.
Oh.
Then the Rashbam also adds, by the way, Nira Be'enai, the Rashbam says, it seems to me that the same thing would also apply in reverse. What if some of the children passed away during his lifetime? So then we would say that she's going to get the larger portion, because in other words, we're going to go according to how it is at the time of the division rather than, so it doesn't matter whether the number of children went up or down. Either way, we're not going to go according to how it was when he said this, but rather how it is when the division of the property is actually done.
Sometimes you go according to when he said something.
So you're always going to go according to how it was when they're dividing, of how it is when they're dividing,
right.
Whether the number of children then is more or less than when he said it originally. So whether he went from two children to five, let's say, or whether Rahman al-Islam went from five down to two, either way, we're going to calculate her portion according to how many children there are at the time when the actual division takes place. So the Ritva points out on this over here. I mean, what really is the chiddush after all? I mean, a person can't give whatever matonis he wants. So he points out a few things that Rava is not really saying a new din of his own. He's just clarifying what Rav Abba is saying. Or that Rav Abba is saying, even he said ke'echad min abonim, we don't say it's considered like a loshen of Yerusha, it's considered like a matana. Because again, if it was Meloshin Yerusha, that's the thing. When you were asking before about the daughter, if he wants to say Meloshin Yerusha, then he can't do it with a daughter or with a wife, according to Chachamim or Rav Yechon ben Breka, because the only ones who can yaushen him validly afi Torah are his sons. But if he's saying Meloshin Matana, then that's different. So Rava wants us to know that when he says ke'echa min abonim, which sounds like a loshen of Yerusha, nevertheless we construe it as a matana. So that would be a chiddush of what Rava is saying.
So
the same thing would apply to a daughter. If he wanted to say that one of his daughters is going to get a matana equal to one of his sons, that's fine. A matana, you can say whatever you want.
Works.
Matana was saying always works. Yeah.
But he's saying
ke'echa min abonim. Yeah. So, and then the third point is that as the Rashbam had said, it might mean that she forfeits her ksuba. It may mean, like the Rashbam's second possibility, that she gets it in addition to her ksuba. So these would all be chidushim. That we see from what Rava is saying.
Why is the chidush if it's not matana?
Because the point is, the fact that he said Bein Abonim, you would think is a Loshen of Yerusha. And a Loshen of Yerusha, it shouldn't be affected, because how can you say a Loshen of Yerusha on somebody who's not Roy Yerusha? Even Rabbi Yechon and Breka wouldn't allow that. But the answer is, here we're saying that even though he said Ke'echem Abonim, it still counts as a Yerusha rather than a, it still counts as a Matana rather than as a Yerusha.
Even though he didn't explicitly use the word.
Means that he would still have to say the word matana at some point, but the point is the fact that he said the bein abonim doesn't make that a loshen of Yerusha. So here the Rashbam has said that it doesn't matter whether the number of children goes up or down between when he said this and when it happens. The Ritva also brings that may not necessarily be so simple. He brings from the Ravid had a suffix on it, and the Ra'ah actually said that no, either way we're going to say Yodal Atachtona. It's going to be according to the lesser number of children between when he said it and when they actually divide it. So if the number of children went up, then we're going to go according to when he said it, and if the number of children went down, then we're going to go according to how it is at the time of the division. Always Yodal Atachtona. Next, Sholach Leir of Abel or of Yosef Achama, Hamotzi Shtar Choyv Achaveiro. Reuben brings out a Shtar Choyv that Shimon owes him money. Malva Oymelo Nefrati Klum, and Reuben is saying, I have this Shtar that you're only $100 and you haven't paid me any of it. Veloiva Oymelo Parayti Mechze. Shimon says, I paid half of it. So he's a Moedim Mechzes. Now Edom come along and say they paid the whole thing. So if it hadn't been for those edim, then it would be plain and simple moedim mitzvahs. There's no chiddush in what Rav Abba is going to say. But here the edim came, and so here before the edim came, he had already said that he paid half of it. So then the din will be the loiva has to pay that the loiva has to swear that he paid half because moedim mitzvahs the goyva mechza and the malva will be able to collect half. I the edim are saying that he's potter. Hadas bal din to me edim dami. So now, in other words, the point is Tosfos makes the point that like this. Why b'chlal? Usually against a shtah, we wouldn't believe him to say that I paid anything at all. But here, after all, there is a reyusa, there's a weakness in the shtar, because after all, there are edim who come later on and say that he paid the whole thing. So now we believe him against that shtar to the extent that I'll be potter from half. That collection of Abba continues can be only minachosim b'nei chorin, but he can only collect from nachosim b'nei chorin, only from karka that still belongs to the loiva at the time. Abba m'shabodim loy, but he can't collect from m'shabodim de amri, because any people who bought karka from the loiva can say anana edim samchinon. As far as we're concerned, we're relying on the edim. We're not the baal din who said that he owes. So as far as we know, he paid it back, and therefore there's no shibud on us. And therefore, you don't have a right to exercise a shibud against us. So in other words, the Rashbam says the lakuchas can actually say, "Listen, you're making a pnunya over here. You're trying to play games over here in order to get the karka away from us." No, we have every reason to say that the edim are saying correctly that he paid the whole thing, and therefore you have no claim against us at all.
You don't say me. You don't say does.
Hadas al din kneidim dummy can apply to the loiva himself. He can't apply it to other people who bought from him. And the Gemara continues, v'afilu l'Rav Akiva d'amar meishav aveda havi. Now you have a case where Rav Akiva holds that a person can be considered a meishav aveda. Namely, you have a case in Bava Metzia where you have a shtar that it just says that Reuven owes Shimon coins, sloyim, or dinarim without saying a number. Now mir t'rabim shnayim, so he definitely owes him at least two, but how many? What happens if the Malva claims it's five and the Loiva says it was three? So Rav Shimon Elazar considers him to be a Moediv Mixas. Rav Akiva holds him to be Meshiv Aveda. He's returning a lost object. He could have gotten away with saying two, and instead he voluntarily says three. So therefore, Rav Akiva says, the same way as a person returns a lost object, Mitzad Takanas Chachamim, you don't make him swear, even if the guy claims that he lost more than that. The same way over here, Rav Akiva says, since he's voluntarily admitting to the third one, then you don't make him swear. However, that would only be hanimili hecha deleka edim. That's only when there are no edim involved. Aval hecha de ika edim. But where there are edim involved, the edim who wrote the shtar have no idea. They wrote sloim, and then we don't know how many it is. But where there are edim involved, as over here, eventually edim show up. Irtuse irtas. So therefore, he has reason to be afraid. He doesn't know what the edim are going to say. Like this, in the end, the edim say in his favor that he paid the whole thing. But he didn't know originally. So therefore, he might be afraid to lie in the first place. And therefore, even Rabbi Akiva is not going to consider him a meishav aveda over the fact that he claimed that he paid half of it. So therefore, even Rabbi Akiva would require him to pay the half after he takes the shavur that he doesn't owe the other half. Now that's the Rashbam's.
You don't write amount.
They wrote sloim, so it means minimum of two. But yeah. Now there are a number of Rishonim who have the girsa over here, not because there were edim heichadika edim, but rather because there's a shtar. Because there's a shtar which has an actual amount in it. In the case that Rav Akiva and Rav Shimon Elazar are arguing about, the shtar just says sloim, but here the shtar says an actual amount in it. So therefore there are Rishonim who learn that actually the girsa over here should be that because of the shtar. Therefore he might be afraid to lie, and the most he's going to do is moedim mitzvah. So we can't consider him a meishav aveda. So the Gemara says, Maskif l'mar b'ravashi. So mar b'ravashi asks on that, Adrabba. On the contrary, you should say the other way around. Afilu l'Rav Shimon ben Elazar, d'amar moed mitzvah taina avi. Even according to Rav Shimon ben Elazar, who says that in that case of the shtar that just says sloyim, and he says three, that he should have to swear because he's a murder mitzvah, you could argue that in that case, Rav Shimon ben Elazar requires him to swear, and he merely has to let the edim to come a sayalei. On the contrary, you could argue there are no edim who support his claim. I will hate the ikka edim to come a sayalei. Here, after all, the edim support his claim because they're saying he doesn't owe anything at all. So even though they came only after he admitted, nevertheless, apparently he knew that they were going to be coming. So therefore, for sure, if he's saying that he paid half, we should consider him a Meshav Aveda, and we should believe him, and he shouldn't have to swear. So Ma'a B'Ravashi is saying we can't, how can we say, like Rab Abba, that he should have to swear, he should be considered a Meshav Aveda, and by Takanas Chacham, he should be potter from swearing. So, in fact, Tosfos points out that it may not be just that he knows that there are Edom coming. He knows that he figures the Edom are coming to help him out. But on the other hand, they might end up contradicting him. But Ma'a B'Ravashi is saying we have more reason to think that he figures they're going to support him, and therefore how can we say that he's a murder of mitzvahs and should have to swear? He shouldn't have to. So the Gemara says, Dorash Mazutra Meshmeid of Shimi Ba'ashi, Hilchsa B'cholhani Shmeitza, Kedisholach Led of Abel of Yosef Achoma. The halacha is, in fact, in all of these dinim, like what Rav Abba sent to Rav Yosef Achoma, in each one of these dinim, Mazutra is saying that the halacha is like Rav Abba, in each of these half dozen cases. So even though in some cases we have other Chachamim argue with him, we have, for example, as far as the one about Goyim and Havodim, Rav Nachman disagrees with him. Mazutra said it doesn't matter. The halacha is like Rav Abba. The case involving Karka. Okay, the case involving Adris of Karka, where he became blind. Okay, there we already slogged up all the other Amidoyim. The case, let's say, for example, with Ha'im al Tinik ben Abonim, where Rav Yechanan disagrees with him. Rav Mazutra is saying it doesn't matter. The halacha is like Rav Abba. But Amalei Ravina Lo Ravashi did Rav Nachman Mai. What about the one where Rav Nachman disagrees with him about collecting from Avodim? Amalei, so Ravashi says, Ein Goyvin. The fact is that Amalei Ein Goyvin Masninim Lo. The answer is Ravashi says in that case actually we learn. Now, the problem is that we usually have the halacha is like Rav Nachman and Dinei Mamonos. And here we have Rav Nachman arguing in one of these cases with Rav Abba. Shouldn't that mean the halacha should be like him? So Rav Ashi answers, you're right. Actually, we in our Beis Medrash, we learn that Rav Abba to begin with had said you can't collect from Avadim and Bechein Omer Rav Nachman. And therefore, it wasn't that Rav Nachman disagrees with that, but rather Rav Nachman had said the same thing. So therefore, no contradiction. Well, the question is, well, then by saying Hilchsa, the halacha is like Rav Abba, what are we coming to exclude? Ila Pukimid Rava, are you telling me to tell us not like Rava, who said in the case of relatives giving Adris, that Rava had said that a great nephew can say Adris on behalf of his great uncle? There's no reason to have to say the halacha is like Rav Abba, Moisifu, because Rav is just adding to what Rav Abba is saying. Maybe even Rav Abba would agree with that din. He mentioned Shlishi B'Sheni. He mentioned first cousins once removed, but he wouldn't necessarily disagree that a great nephew could say on behalf of the great uncle. So there's no reason to say the halacha is like Rav Abba as though others disagree with him. If you're going to say in the case of Ma'abar of Ashi, who said in that same case that he could save Adris on behalf of his grandfather, we anyway don't need to say the halacha of Rav Abba, because we already said less hilchsa k'ma'abar of Ashi. The Gemara had said right there that the halacha is not like a Ma'abar of Ashi in that. The Ila Pukim in the Shmuel of Sheshes of Papa, is it the case where the guy became blind and was saying we have to know the halacha is not like Shmuel and Rav Sheshes and Rav Papa, that there can be cases where a blind person is kosher to give Eidos? You don't need to. They were anyway schlogged up. So again, what is Mazutra telling us by saying the halacha is like Rav Abba in all these cases? Elola pukim did Rav Yechanan or me askafta the mabra Rav Ashi. So there are two of these cases. The one case where Rav Yechanan disagrees with him, where he says about tinik ben abonim, where we said Rav had explained that it meant that he says this one is a bechor, and we believe him, and Rav Abba had said, following Rav Yehuda, that we believe him, and Rav Yechanan disagreed. You should know the halacha is like Rav Abba, which in turn means the halacha is like Rav Yehuda against the Chachamim. And also, in the last case, in the last case over here, about the case with the where he says that he paid half, and the Edom then later on came and said that he paid the whole thing, even though Mabra Rav Ashi objected and said, why should we make him have to swear? Shouldn't he be considered a Meishu Rav Eda? Nevertheless, we don't follow that. We follow Rav Abba's din and say that he still has to swear. Because again, since there were Edom involved, or there's a Shtar involved, then therefore Mirtas, he's more afraid to say that he paid the whole thing. So therefore we can't call him a Meshav Aveda.
But the one is the one halacha, it's not like him.
So we're saying, in other words, in all these, so altogether, yeah, of all these halachas, there's one where the halacha is not like him. That would be the case where that would be the case of collecting from Avodim. So Rav Ashi's version of that din was that actually Rav Abba said you can't collect from Avodim. So and that Rav Nachman says the same thing. So the version that we had in the Gemara originally, where he said you could collect from Avodim, the halacha is not like that. The halacha is rather like Rav Ashi's version of Rav Abba's statement. As far as the rest of them, the point is, even where we don't have anything to slug up the other Amiroyim who argue with him, Rav Yechanan and Ma'abar Rav Ashi respectively, nevertheless the halacha is like him.
Like Rav Abba.
And that's Tosfos points out, as we said before, that it means, in other words, that even, for example, in the case of the blind person, where Rav Abba had mentioned Eidus Karka, and you might have inferred from that he would say that by Eidus Halva, a blind person would be kosher, and then the Braisa would slog him up as well. We don't say that. We mean that he's saying that any kind of Eidus, a blind person, is possible for, and the Braisa is saying exactly the same thing, so no contradiction on him. So then Tosfos goes on to discuss a little bit as far as these dinim of who's kosher and who's posel to say edus for each other. Tosfos ends up saying that a shlishi gedrishin would be posel. So again, in other words, in the scenario that we had before, for example, to have Chanoch's son testify on behalf of Shimon, where Rabbeinu Tam says would be posel d'rabbanan. Because here we were talking about before, what's posel, what's kosher, and posel edus d'oraisa. But in addition, you have rules d'rabbanan on it, which we're going to learn about in Masechta Sanhedrin, and Rabbeinu Tam holds that would be included as well.
I think these luck is
from Rav Abba.
With regard to the wife being able to yarshin.
So we said, so that case over here where he says that he wants his wife to yarshin as one of his children, yeah, we said the halacha, yeah, no, nobody disagreed with him. All we had was Rav was clarifying that it means that we look only at the nechosim that he has right now, because ain't on a machmen davar shalei b'la olam, and that we look at the children of Bonim Abonim Ma'acham Ikan, where there you have, within that, you have the machlokas of the Rashbam and the Ra'ah, what the din is, if the number, do we go according to the number of children when the division is done, always, whether it's more or fewer children, or do we go always according to the lesser number between them, because we would say that Yod Allah Tachtayna, as the Ra'ah holds. So again, because the Rashbam held that whether the number of children went up from when he said this, or whether it went down, either way you would go according to how it is at the time of Chalukah. Whereas according to the Ra'ah, you're always going to look at what was the lesser number. If he had fewer children at the beginning and more at the end, then we're going to go according to the larger number, and she's going to get a smaller portion. If it was more children and she got and then they became less because some of them passed away, then she would get a smaller portion based on how it was originally. Oh. Says the Ra'ah. Yeah.
But here he's showing that not yet, showing that because she's getting a surplus, I want to include her. It's showing that he's
nonetheless the Ra'ah holds. But the fact is they're muchzik because they're the default yoshim. So therefore, if she wants to be able to prove that, she should get a larger portion, she'd need to be able to prove that. And we don't have that in his lashon. He just said bein abonim. He didn't specify whether he's going according to now or later.
And bein abonim again only if he says some type of lashon.
Only if he says some type of lashon. matana, right? If he says
once it's a matana, then we just hold it out, turn it, go, goes.
That's fine. The point is, in other words, that we have that we say it still only applies to the nechasim that he has now, and we still obviously if he specified she's going to get X percentage, then fine, that's what she gets, and that's that. We're talking about if he didn't specify, then we have to figure it out for ourselves.
Okay.